to the audio event of the century, featuring two lifelong best friends. We love the Leafs. We love each other. But most of all, we love William Nylander. Welcome to the Buds All Day.
Hello and welcome to the Buds All Day podcast. I'm Sats Mundine, coming to you guys after a 4-1 Leafs victory over the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. The Leafs got their goals from Austin Matthews, David Kampf, Michael Bunting, and Morgan Riley, while the Pens got their lone goal from Evgeny Malkin. Now, I am not joined by Lebda tonight. We have another special guest, and today's guest is Marty, better known to some of you as at TMLFanInVan on Twitter. Marty, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Nice to join you tonight.
It's a pleasure to have you, my friend. Always good to get one of our better follows on Leafs Twitter to join us. So thanks for coming on. Now, just to quickly wrap up the game, the Leafs, they got off to a good start. They pretty much led from the 22nd point of the game right through to the end. They got peppered with quite a few shots, but I think a lot of that kind of tended to be just score effects. You know, basically Pittsburgh was chasing the game all night. I thought the Leafs looked pretty good, but Marty, what did you think of the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to look at the shots and say that the Leafs goalied a team finally, but I actually think that, I mean, analytics freaks out there will correct me if I'm wrong, but it does appear that a lot of the shots, although the handful that Jack needed to save, he saved, but I don't know how many of those were high danger, so it'd be interesting to see that in depth. But yeah, I thought the Leafs dominated start to finish. And the score sheet showed it. Although, you know, you got to score in this league. So, and they did, and that's how they won. So what are you going to do? I mean, that's all you can do. You could say, you look at the score sheet 4-1 and say, yeah, maybe they didn't deserve to win based on shots, but they did. So here we are.
Yeah. You look at the deserve to win o-meter. You have Pittsburgh at 70%, but I was looking at it throughout the game. Toronto was above 60% basically through the second period. It was kind of in that third period where Pittsburgh just peppered a bunch of, like you said, kind of meaningless shots that seemed to be from the outside. I thought Jack Campbell actually had his best moments early on in that game when it was 1-0. I felt like Pittsburgh had quite a few chances in that first period, and Jack was just shutting them down. And even if a lot of the shots tonight were pretty easy, for Jack to only allow one goal on 46 shots, after the way he's been struggling lately, that's got to be, for me, the most positive thing to come out of tonight.
Yeah, no, he was great. When he's a confident goalie, the way he makes saves, you never feel like he's scrambling. And I mean, he's a pleasure to watch because he's a safe goalie. He reminds me of when I was a kid watching Ed Belfour, kind of like that old school style of goalie, preventing rebounds, super well positioned kind of player. I'm a huge fan, and he did great tonight.
Yeah, he looked pretty locked in. He did look a lot less shaky, a lot more secure than he has lately. You know, he'd kind of been giving up bad rebounds, been out of position, looking kind of like a fish out of water at times, but he did look a lot better. And it was interesting because coming into this game, I probably would have chosen to go with Peter Mrazek just to continue the the every other game thing for Jack, not trying to burn him out, you know, let him ride the high of his pretty decent performance against Seattle into the weekend, basically. But Keith went with Campbell, and it certainly wasn't a mistake. So hopefully he can build on these last two games where he's only allowed 3 goals total. He's getting back to his form. We talked about on the previous podcast how he's basically been pretty bad since December. So if we can get not even the Vezina version of Jack, but just the solid 915 to 925 save percentage, somewhere in their version of Jack, I think that's going to go a long way down the stretch for us.
Yeah, and I think the secret with Jack is exactly what Elliot Friedman said on the broadcast, which is, you know, when they had the COVID-19 shutdown in December, it threw off his flow. And, you know, it's no secret that goalies love routine. And I think that that caused a bit of the issues we've seen in the last maybe 10, 15 games with Jack, letting in 1 or 2 maybe bad goals. Although for some reason the team weathered the storm and they have a winning record. So, you know, at the end of the day, wins are the only thing that matters. But, you know, maybe some hockey pundits would say the goalie has to be better than Jack's been in the last maybe 10 games. But tonight he looked great. So what are you going to do? He won. And that's all that matters. So the routine is, it's good to get back into routine and play consistently. And yeah, Peter gets some games too. That's good for Jack. It's awesome.
So with the Leafs having played Monday against Seattle, they played tonight, which is Thursday against Pittsburgh, and they play again on Saturday. Who are you going with against the Blues? They play the Blues on Saturday. They play the Canadiens Monday, and then they have a back-to-back against the Blue Jackets. So you know Mrazek's getting
Peter play on Monday, I think. Or back-to-back. Yeah, what's the schedule again? Say that one more time.
So Saturday versus the Blues, Monday versus the Habs, and Tuesday versus the Jackets. So I'm thinking you probably, if Jack's playing so well right now, if he's kind of getting into that rhythm, like you said, maybe you give him that Saturday start, let Mrazek get the easy one against the Habs, and then Jack gets kind of another fairly inferior opponent in the Blue Jackets Tuesday.
Yeah, well, I think I'd probably run Campbell on Saturday and Tuesday and then let Peter take Montreal. But we'll find out. I mean, Keefe's the guy. It'll probably be Campbell on Saturday and Monday and then Mrazek on Tuesday. That's the most, quote, logical. But, you know, who knows?
It'll be interesting. I think it's looking pretty likely with the fact that Keefe went back to Campbell tonight that I would think he gives him a start against a pretty solid opponent in the Blues. So we'll see how that goes, but hopefully he just gets on that roll. He gets himself going now. One guy who is absolutely going and his whole line has been for quite some time now is Mitch Marner. And again, he just, that line looked dominant tonight.
Yeah, Mitchie's our favorite in our house. It's no secret I'm a massive fan of Mitch Marner. A lot of people don't like his contract, and I don't care about that at all. When he's playing with confidence like he is in the last few games, there's nobody, I don't know, I can only name two or three players better than him as far as wingers go. And yeah, the guys, he did, although that the goal against was on him maybe a little bit, but tonight, but he's it's breathtaking to watch that guy play hockey. He's fun to watch, man.
Yeah. And when he's in rhythm, when he's in that like Mitch Marner having fun mode, there are probably not 10 better players than him in the NHL. He's just the way they're free flowing and that the way that goal was scored by Bunting, this, the tic-tac-toe between the three of them, you can see that line's building up an insane chemistry. Another 2-point night for Marner again, which I think that brings him to 24 points in his last 12 games. You have Matthews with another 2-point night. Bunting does not skip a beat on that line. And they didn't Riley's been amazing, but that line didn't exactly dominate in terms of expected goals at 5-on-5 at only 37%. But you can just see the skill. They could turn it on in the blink of an eye. They got two goals, bang, bang, tonight really quick. And then the way Marner is playing on special teams has just been incredible. Like, I feel like the first 40 seconds of a penalty kill.
Are the Leafs as dangerous on the PK as they are on the PP? It's insane, right?
I would say right now, the Leafs penalty kill is definitely more of a scoring threat than the Leafs power play was last year. That, I think, goes without saying.
Totally. I can fully agree with that. I don't think their power play was anything to write home about last year. It was horrible. Joe Thornton, I don't think he's good at hockey anymore, but he's the same age as me. So I wake up with random knee pain. I pull my back when I get out of bed. So I don't see Joe Thornton being good at hockey at my age, even though he's an elite athlete. You know, that experiment didn't work in my opinion. But yeah, this team is just a totally next level team, in my opinion. But, you know, we still got, it's barely halfway through the season, really, right? We'll find out by the end of February what this team truly is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I personally, like, we're going to find out about this team in May, whenever the playoffs start. I'm not letting my highs get too high in the regular season, but it is nice. And I think one thing that really does differentiate us from last year's team is how much better our special teams is, because you look at the power play right now, first in the league at 31%, and it's a full 4 percentage points above St. Louis in second on the power play. And then penalty kill, yeah, they're up to the top five tonight after another great performance. And it just feels like every time Mitch Marner steps out there, you're pretty much guaranteed that first 40 seconds of the penalty kill is going to be a kill, because he's going to end up with an odd man rush every single time.
Well, and, you know, I was looking at Dom from The Athletic. He's got a great sort of stats. I don't even know what his analytics charts are called. They're called like player charts or something on The Athletic. And David Kampf, if you look at his chart, it's like offense is nothing, but defense is like 10 out of 10. It's like this crazy, wacky chart where And I think Kampf on the penalty kill, the way he can win a face-off, it's just, it reminds me of an old Leaf, Peter Zezel, who when he was on the ice, you're guaranteed a face-off win when you need it. And those special teams, those are so important come playoff time, because you need a guy who can guarantee the dot, right? Especially in a 5-on-3 scenario with 2 minutes to go where you're only up by one, you know. Guys like Mitch and guys like Kampf are going to really help in those scenarios. So here we go. I don't think the Leafs had that last year, to be honest. I don't think they had anything like that.
No, and I even think in the past as well. I remember those Boston series, it would feel like every time we take a penalty, it was pretty much a guaranteed goal for that Bruins power play. And you make a good point about Kampf. I'm looking at his rate adjusted plus minus on Evolving Hockey, and he's in the 99th percentile defensively. So he's exactly what you said. He's a rock solid defensive player. He gets you those big face-off wins. I know they have Jason Spezza on the penalty kill sometimes to do the old face-off get-off roll tonight. He got trapped in his own end for a little bit there, but even he did a good job on that penalty kill. So I think that is something.
If we were going to talk about two weaknesses, I think Spezza, and I've been given grief over this in the past, I think he is a player that, as a person and leader, like 110 out of 100. Like, the guy is clearly, he does something to inspire the youth of today. Like, he's incredible. I love him. But I think this year it's showing, his age is showing a tiny bit, and pucks aren't going in for him like they were last year. And that might be ice time, and it might be age, you know, everyone loses the battle to Father Time, but I think maybe, and I read this in Maple Leafs Hot Stove, that Spezza's time should be managed a little bit down the stretch, and that might be a good thing for him. But the other weakness, sadly, and maybe we'd like to talk about that now, is the Tavares line. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they have not looked great lately. Tonight, they were technically our best line at 5-on-5 in terms of expected goals, but they didn't really do a ton for me. I thought Willie was kind of popping a bit more. I've been noticing him a little bit more tonight than I had in the previous games, but there's no denying that line's struggling right now. And the question that kind of brings up for me is, do you think the Leafs should look at upgrading on that Alex Kerfoot spot on left wing?
So, yeah, I knew you were going to lead into the trade deadline. There's a lot of talk of the trade deadline today with the Sherratt rumors. I don't know. CJ said something on a podcast. I've been a proponent of upgrading the left wing somewhere, either at the trade deadline or, you know, finding something internal with, say, Nick Robertson or something, you know, really pushing Kerfoot down. Because if Kerfoot's are, let's say, the 3C, then that pushes Kampf to the 4C, and that pushes Spezza to the wing. So I actually think that a left winger would be great to have, more so than a defenseman. I think a defensive depth, like, I'm not saying Luke Shen's the guy, but although he might be somebody we'd look at, but if I was Rutherford, I'd actually keep him for next year, because Vancouver's going to need a guy like him, a rock solid defenseman, right? But I think that upgrading scoring is the most important part. Foligno was a mistake last year. Everybody knows it. But had he not been injured, then you and I might not be talking about it as a mistake, because then maybe they beat the Habs. But if Toronto can pry a hurdle out of San Jose, although he looks like he's re-signing, go really strong into the playoffs with the best possible team, then that would be what I would do. But what are your thoughts?
So the first thought I would have is, I do agree, I'd like to upgrade that left wing spot. I think Kerfoot, he's done fine enough there, but we've seen for a while that the advanced metrics, the expected goals, the shot attempts, they're not what you'd hope for a second line that involves William Nylander and John Tavares. I know we talk about that Kerfoot-Nylander chemistry, but I think it's faded a little bit. They've gotten good results in terms of actual goals for this year, but I think that's a little bit luck-driven. I would like to upgrade on that spot. One guy who the Leafs have been rumored to be interested in, Frank Saravalli said it today, that they might be interested in Hagel from Chicago. He's got 27 points in 43 games so far this year. He is only signed for $1.5 million for the next 2 years. He's 23 years old. He's going to be a restricted free agent at the expiry of that deal. So he's a guy who has exceptional metrics. Brandon Hagel's got he's in the 95th percentile in terms of war on evolving hockey. So he's got excellent offensive numbers. I think he could be an amazing fit on that line with Tavares and Nylander. The rumor is that the cost is going to be a first rounder and a top prospect. And to be honest, I'd probably be willing to pay that if it wasn't one of our top four prospects in Niemela, Robertson, Nies, or Amarov.
I think you're right. And I actually think that if they're going to swing, they need to swing. And I think that I don't know, and I may get eviscerated on Twitter for this, but I don't know if Robertson is a guy we want to keep in the medium term. Maybe 5 years from now, everybody will look and say, why do we trade him? I really like him as a player, but he looks like he's injury prone, and maybe that's a work ethic thing. Just his motor's faster than his brain, maybe. Fantastic work ethic kind of player, which you actually want. He's a tad undersized maybe, but I'm a fan of him as a person. So maybe a guy like him could get traded. Amirov, everybody's saying he might be a bit of a bust. So maybe we don't want to develop him anyway. Maybe we look at trading him. But I would say that Dubas has some big decisions to make. I have a crazy, crazy trade for you. Maybe you'll appreciate this. What if we upgrade our left wing at second line by actually upgrading our right wing, and we bring back Phil the Thrill? Yeah, it's crazy. It's totally crazy. Phil the Thrill, because apparently Arizona's desperately trying to get rid of him. He on a team like Toronto now, and because what he can do in the playoffs, and he showed that, he obviously showed that in Pittsburgh, he can play a clutch role. If you put him on the second line and move Nylander to the left wing, What do you think about that? Phil the Thrill back in Toronto. We're already paying him $1 million this year.
I have two opinions on this. One, I would not want him on the second line just because I think the defensive liability that line would be pretty terrifying. But I am with you that I would be very interested in him because I saw the same report. It said that they were willing to retain half of his salary and would still only be asking for like a third round pick or something, which would mean you're getting Phil Kessel at about $3 million. And if you look at his numbers this year, he has 32 points in 48 games. His metrics on evolving hockey are pretty good. He's in the 54th percentile. I don't think he's there defensively at this point in his career to play a role on the second line. But I think if you talked about Spezza earlier, let me throw this fourth line of Spezza and Kessel centered by Pierre Engvall. And then you have a second power play with Spezza and Kessel just ripping bombs. I think that could be an interesting addition. It would probably be something I would do if other options fell through just because of the amount of cap even a half-retained Phil Kessel is going to do. I'd probably want to shoot a little bit higher. But if he's sitting there on deadline day and we have a little bit of room to maybe say we added a guy like Scott Mayfield or somebody on the back end, and we still have a little bit of cap space to make another deal. Not even just for the player, but the vibes of Phil Kessel being back would just be immaculate.
Of course. I've got a Kessel jersey, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Phil.
I have one too.
That's a full disclosure moment. But like if the Leafs swing for a mid-tier defenseman like Braun, or yeah, Mayfield, probably the cost of Mayfield's going to be off the chain. I think you lose a trade with Lou on Mayfield, in my opinion. But if they can get a guy like Braun, who, you know, sneaks under the radar a little bit, the cost might be a little less. And you get a guy like Phil, just winger depth, who can score. Everybody knows that guy can score, especially on the power play. Yeah, he's not a defensive specialist, but you know what? John Tavares is not a defensive specialist. That's no secret now that John is more of an offensive possession guy, sadly. He gets burned by fast-footed opponents. So that's the one thing I will say about John is he's underrated, but he's not defensive, in my opinion. So maybe you put Phil on that line, and then Austin's line is the matchup line, and then John's line is the ozone, you know, game breaker line.
Well, and then you also do have the line with David Camp. You put him with Engvall and Kasha. We saw that line play against other teams' top six earlier in the year and break even. So it is something that would be possible, even if it's not Phil Kessel on that line. Even if you just add somebody else who's not going to improve your defense on that line, you can probably get away with getting John Tavares shifts against middle six opponents where you are, like you said, giving him those offensive zone starts where he has a chance to not really play in his own end, which would be good. And I do like the name of Justin Braun that you brought up, because I forget who it was. I think it was LeBron who said that the Leafs have inquired about him. Now, he's a 35-year-old, which is slightly concerning. But if you look at his metrics on Evolving Hockey, he is in the 97th percentile defensively. He's a right-handed guy playing 20 minutes a night for Philly. He's making under $2 million. I think if you can get him for anything less than a first round, you get him for a second or something like that, he could be an excellent fit with Jake Muzzin on the second pair.
Or, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Sandin and Lily. I'm actually not a Justin Hall hater. I mean, I am a Leafs homer. Don't get me wrong. Every player's flawed a little bit, and I want depth for the Leafs, but you know, getting a guy like Braun, and you find out what you got with him. You see what he has, see what you have. We won with Dermott tonight, so I don't think that Dermott looked outmatched tonight. I don't think
And Hall were actually our best defensive pair in terms of expected goals tonight.
The thing with Justin Hall is he makes mistakes at inopportune times, right? And that was what happened in Calgary. And I just I don't know if you're up like. Is Braun or Ben Chiarot
no.
so much better than Hall? Like, are those two players worth sacrificing what you might or might not have in Amarov next year, then the year after, or Robertson the next year, the year after? Like, the thing is, we've lost players in the past. We got lucky with Bunting because he's technically a rookie. But if you lose one of these prospects who, yeah, they're mid-tier prospects or maybe slightly lower than that, but another team takes them and then gives them a chance to shine, and then they're amazing. Like, look at what's happening with dude in Florida who his name's slipping my mind right now, that we lost. Well, Carter Verhaeghe is one, but that's
a Mason Marchment. Difference.
Thank you, Marchment. Yeah, to lose a guy like Marchment, who we didn't really know what we had in him. He didn't look that great, and now he's thriving, right? You give him some time, let him simmer. So you're always kind of reticent to trade some of these players, because until you know what you have with them on the Marlies for a year or two or three, who knows? Like, Mac Hollowell was signed for a two-way this today. I found that really interesting. What did you think of that?
I'll be honest, I did not have a ton of thoughts on Mac Hollowell. I'm not a huge Marlies watcher. It's good to see them, you know, extend guys in the organization, but I do agree you don't want to give up top-end prospects. So for a guy like Justin Braun, I would not, like I said, it'd have to be something less than a first. It wouldn't include any of those top four prospects, but I do really think he could help the Leafs because he has excellent defensive metrics this year. And even if you look at his past years in his career, he's been a really solid defensive guy over the last 3 years. And if you can have him and Muzzin, a couple guys, you know, both about 6'2", 6'3", probably going to take a bit of an advantage of that playoff whistle. And you can have a third pairing of either Sandin and Hall, Sandin, Liljegren, something like that. Maybe you move, like, maybe Philly's got some interest in a guy like Dermott plus a third, something like that, for a deal like Braun. I really do think he could help. Another name you mentioned, I do want to talk about him, is Ben Chiarot.
Yes.
Because Chris Johnson,
I have some thoughts.
Yes, and I will let you get to those, and I will first introduce it here.
You tell me your Chris, thoughts.
I will tell you, and they're extensive. Chris Johnson on his podcast tonight said, the Maple Leafs I know have called on him a fair bit, and some believe that they might bite, you know, perhaps even be the front runner or one of the front runners to land him. I will say right now, if Kyle Dubas does this, I want him fired on the spot. Ben Chiarot has been one of the 10 worst players in the NHL by every single metric this year. He is slow. He is a soon-to-be unrestricted free agent. He is has no ability with the puck. He is terrible. His defense, he has been in the bottom percentile of all defenders defensively this year. Last year, I know a lot of people like to say, oh, but he's a playoff beast. I tweeted out today, on the among Habs regular defensemen, he was the worst in terms of goals for, expected goals for, Corsi for, and scoring chances for. He was the worst Hab player by all of those metrics. He was well below 45% of them all. And he's a left-handed guy. He doesn't even solve the right-handed issue. So for me, Ben Chiarot is an absolute no. I wouldn't take him for a fifth rounder, let alone the first rounder that Montreal is probably going to get.
So I 100% agree with you. And so you and I both know, well, maybe you don't think this way. I know for a fact Kyle Dubas is smarter than me. And I know for a fact he's hired people smarter than him in the organization. So with that being said, using Chris Johnson to announce that publicly, is that truth or is that smoke and mirrors? So I don't know. Like, is Kyle driving up the price on purpose or is it just face value? Yes, they're interested in Ben Chiarot or are they, is it a distraction so they can get the guy they want? Like, I look, but then I think of Tampa last year getting David Savard. I didn't really think Savard was great. I thought he was, but he won the Stanley Cup. So maybe Ben Chiarot.
Can I give you one counter on David Savard though?
Of course. Of course you can.
Ben Chiarot is in the bottom, like literally the last percentile of defensive players this year. David Savard was in the 92nd percentile. So while they're a similar style of player, David Savard is actually good at his job, whereas Ben Chiarot sucks at his job.
Yeah, Ben Chiarot, I don't have enough intel on him. I've just seen all of the charts. You know, I've seen the Rapham charts, and I know that he's 0 or 1%. And I wonder if that's, they don't have Shea Weber, they don't have Carey Price, they don't have Danault. You know, Drouin's injured. They've got some, that Montreal's got some problems, and you and I both know that when Dion Phaneuf was in Toronto, he's not a first line defenseman. He was an elite second line pairing defenseman at one time. But when you put a player like that in the wrong place, they're going to fail. So maybe Ben Chiarot would be a good third pairing guy for the Leafs because that's the best he's going to do, honestly. And maybe having a gritty guy like him on the Leafs is good. I don't think the Plekanec experiment worked in Toronto. I think maybe is Kyle thinking if we have a guy like Ben, if we match up with Tampa, then we have a big body at the net. Are they looking at it like that, like a 3D chess kind of maneuver? I don't know. I don't see the perspective. You're right. We don't fire Kyle Dubas, but we do question. I do question the report. I question CJ. I question the perspective and I question the motive. Obviously, the Leafs know more about the player than I do, but yeah, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good if they want a first.
The reason I said I would fire Kyle Dubas is because I know he's not that stupid to do that. I do not. Like, if he does, though, then I genuinely fire him if he gives a first rounder for Ben Chiarot.
Do you think it's smoke and mirrors?
That's where I was kind of going. I said it on Twitter. I think either what happened was the Leafs put that out there so that maybe they could make a move on a guy like Justin Braun, or they could, you know, make Florida go for Ben Chiarot. Cause if you're one of your rivals gets him, great. Austin Matthews. Well, I know he shut down Matthews, but really that was Carey Price. And that was Austin Matthews busted wrist. You give Austin Matthews another crack at Ben Chiarot in the playoff series, I'm predicting 6+ goals.
If you rerun the Leafs against the Habs, that series, I think the Leafs win 999 times out of 1,000. We could talk about that in detail, but I mean, John Tavares getting it.
You're actually correct. Sorry to interrupt you, but you're actually correct that of teams who posted a similar number of goals for, expected goals for, all of those types of metrics as the Leafs did versus the Habs, I'm pretty sure the teams won those series 95% of the time. So in classic Leafs fashion, we found that 5% that we could lose in.
But the Tavares injuries, I mean, that was, 100%. In my opinion, the biggest factor because it showed how thin the Leafs were down the center without him last year. I think this year's a little different, and that's why maybe bringing in Adam Brooks isn't the worst idea because Brooksy, you know, center depth, to have for the playoffs. He's a decent player. He's actually not a bad guy, bad player. I read something today that's interesting. There's a Twitter account who is very good at looking at the accrued cap space daily. And I can't remember the handle. I'm sorry, whoever it is. But it was a fascinating tweet about Nick Ritchie, about the Leafs maybe want him for the playoffs. What do you think about that? Do you think that they're trying to do their best to keep him out of all of this?
Well, I know Elliot Friedman said, I think it was on Saturday, that they are looking to move him. I think if they can clear $2.5 million by getting rid of him, they'll definitely do it. But I think you're onto something, that if he is still on this team come May, he's possibly a guy that they would go to. Maybe he's a guy who, you know, he sits for the first 2-3 games of a series and he realizes, hey, if I come in for this game, I'm going to play 10 minutes and I'm going to go balls to the wall. I'm going to take some heads. I'm going to throw some punches. I'm going to do some of that stuff. I'm not writing off that he could do something as a Leaf, but I do expect if we make any move for significant money that he is either headed to the team that we're trading him to or like rerouted to Arizona or something.
Yeah, he has to be out. And, you know, I think about carrot versus stick and how coaches manage players and get the most out of them. Because, I mean, the coach's role is to get the most out of their roster and use whatever tactics they have. And everybody knows the story of Mike Babcock and Mitch Marner. But I wonder if the carrot versus stick, a guy like Nick Ritchie needs more of a stick. And that's not not a knock on Nick. I wonder if he needs – and Keefe, because – you know, whatever Keefe's doing with a guy like Michael Bunting or Kampf or Kasha or the laundry list of other players, he makes them all look the best version of themselves. I wonder if Nick Ritchie and Keefe's style don't match, because Keefe's, although he is a hard ass, don't get me wrong, I just think that Nick needs to get sent down to the Marlies to say, hey, guess what? Get your ass in gear, buddy. Come on, let's go. Because apparently he played and he talked to reporter after the game, after last night's game, and he was clearly not very happy that he was playing for the Marlies, but he did score a goal.
He's
so
not happy.
Yeah, well, maybe he'll be motivated because he's in the biggest market. He's just down the street from his folks. His buddies are texting him, what the hell's going on with you, buddy? You're getting sent down. Come on, pull up your socks. Maybe this is what will light a fire in Nick Ritchie. Maybe there's still a chance for that kid.
The thing that I think is, if he could not get up for a game against the team that didn't qualify him in the Boston Bruins on a Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, playing beside Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, if that didn't light a firecracker up his ass, I'm not counting anything to light anything up his ass, because he was the most lifeless player I've seen. And it's like, dude, you're 6'3". The least you can do is go out, lay some hits. Don't take your stupid penalties that you always take. But he couldn't even do that. So he's a guy who maybe if you really push him, you really give him that stick, you give him a 20-foot stick for a 1-inch carrot, maybe then he'll actually give a crap. But I gotta say, I have been so disappointed with him. I
wanted something from him too. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw how he played in Boston last year, 15 goals in 56 games. He did well against lower level competition. I thought, great, this guy could slide in on our third, fourth line, chip in with goals, kind of play like that role we wanted Wayne Simmonds to play last year. And he was as disappointing as could be.
Yeah, Nick stinks, dude. But maybe if they end up having to keep him, because, you know, he's not worth 2.5, so they might have to keep him in the end. Maybe being sent to the Marlies for a while is a good thing for this kid. Maybe he gets a chance because somebody gets injured, whether it be Kasha or Mikheyev or laundry list of players who are always getting injured because injuries happen. Like even Austin's mouth today, his teeth, but maybe he comes
that
up
hadn't
and
hurt by the way.
Oh yeah. It looked like it hurt like hell, but maybe Richie comes up and starts scoring goals on the fourth line. That's what we all want. We want our team to succeed. So I look at it like that. If there are no moves at the trade deadline because the cost is too high, you have to look internally. So I think you're right, though. I think a guy like Braun, or I keep coming back to Luke Schenn because I really like the idea of JT Miller and Luke Schenn to the Leafs. I think that's a really big win for both teams, especially if Dermott goes back and somebody like Nick Robertson in a first, probably something else too.
Yeah, if you look at the deal that Montreal made for Toffoli, they got a first rounder and they got Emil Heinemann and a fifth. Emil Heinemann's a guy who would not be in that top four Leafs prospect list. Like, so he's not, it'd be like kind of like a Mikhail Abramov or something like that. And I got to say, Toffoli's getting only $4 million. He's getting paid, he's got 2 years left, whereas Miller is getting 5.25. He's got only 1 year left. So he's the better player in terms of points, JT Miller, but in terms of two-way play, Toffoli's actually better. So
yeah, Miller's great. They've pros and cons, right? Miller's a left winger, which is what the team needs. Shen is D depth, which is what the team needs. One trade, one team. Vancouver improves. They get lots of prospects back, potential, and the Leafs get everything they need to make a deep run in one trade instead of kind of fighting with. And the other thing is a lot of American players don't want to come up to Canada, allegedly, because of COVID-19 restrictions. So JT Miller will be traded to Toronto, which is in Canada. So he already knows the country, although he isn't apparently a big fan of the country, but he's ornery. I don't
think many people are right now.
Yeah. Well,
That's a topic for another day. But yeah, I think a guy like JT Miller, he'd be a good fit. He'd kind of fall into that, like, you put him on the line with Tavares, you don't give them defensive minutes because he's not exactly a defensive stalwart. But that line, you're down a goal, that's a line you are throwing out every other shift.
Yeah, and it's certainly an upgrade on Kerfoot, right? And Kerfoot slides down, which is what you and I think we really want. I really like Alex Kerfoot. I think they call him a Swiss Army knife. He is. He had a couple of really good shifts tonight. That pass to Mikheyev, that blind pass on the penalty kill was kind of weird, but you know, he's a smart, I think he's got a really high IQ, but I think that the hands aren't quite there, if you follow me, but he can skate and he can play. I like Kerfoot, but I think he's probably more of a third liner than a second liner, in my opinion only.
And honestly, if he's a guy that we had to give up, sell high on him to get ourselves that top tier level guy, like a JT Miller or like a Thomas Hertl, even a Hagel, something like that, like it's a guy I'd be willing to give up. I think Luke Shen he'd be a decent addition to the bottom pair. I know a lot of people love him. He just doesn't fill that top four need for me. Like for me, what I'm looking for, number one for the Leafs at the deadline, my ambition is get a guy who you can pair with Muzzin, because it just seems like that Muzzin-Hall pairing isn't working. I think they need to look at guys like Damon Severson, like Artem Zub, Colin Miller, even an Adam Larson who's locked up for 4 more years with Seattle at $4 million, Mayfield, Braun. I think they have to go all in and get one of these guys.
My concern with every player you mentioned is the cost at the end of the day worth more than what Hall is, because is Larson better than Hall? I don't know. Colin Miller is not. He's not the player he was. He was a great player, by the way, at one time. I think Colin Miller could be traded to Toronto, but I don't think he's a second right defenseman, in my opinion.
No, he falls into that. He falls into that kind of Justin Braun category. I would definitely rank Justin Braun ahead of him, but he's into that category where I'm not giving up a first or a top prospect for him. It'd have to be for a cheaper deal. Whereas
what about Martin Marincin playing for Slovakia in the medal round? Hey,
hey, good for.
Hey, Martin. I just had to make one joke. Bring back Marty.
Bring back Marty. Hey, we need the ninth defenseman. We'll hit him up.
No, it's really hard to say. You know, there's so many options and nothing stands out as being the obvious one. Last year it was basically Taylor Hall or Nick Foligno, and we took Foligno, right? And that was the mistake.
Yeah, Lebda and I were crying a lot of tears that we didn't get Taylor Hall. We still swear by it to this day.
I wonder if he actually wanted to come to Toronto. It's really crazy. It's every player you mention, like if I'm New Jersey, I think New Jersey's going to be good next year, so why do they trade Severson, right? And then Mayfield, Lou probably thinks they're going to be good next year. Why do they trade Mayfield now? Why do you get rid of a solid defenseman now?
Even Artem Zub on Ottawa, like Ottawa declared their rebuild over. I completely agree with you on a lot of that. Yeah.
You're only going to get the crap at this time of year, right?
But that's why a guy like Justin Braun, where he's 35, Philly is not going to be contending this year or next. He's a free agent after the year. I think that's one of the guys you might be able to actually pry, because it's either use him or lose him if you're Philly. So
I have one other player I'll get your opinion on that I actually think is a great player and fits in Toronto, is Chychrun. What do you think about Chychrun?
Jacob Chychrun is an excellent, excellent defenseman. He does not fill the right side D that I would like to fill, but he has played, I think, about 25% of his minutes at right D. He's excellent by basically every metric. He's a really solid two-way defenseman. His offensive numbers this year aren't good, but if you look at the team that he's playing with in that soon-to-be 5,000-seat arena in Arizona, you can't really blame him for that. So I would give up a lot to get him. It'd be kind of like the Muzzin trade, obviously for a younger guy with more term than Muzzin, but where you're not filling a hole, but it's just a guy that's so good that you try to make it work. So I wouldn't want to give up like a Sandin in a deal to get him, which I think it would probably take. But if they were willing to do it for, you know, a package of a first, a couple top prospects.
What about Niemela? Robertson.
Done. You take the sure thing in Chychrun, and you know in him you have a top four guy. Maybe you move Muzzin down to the third pair. Maybe you put Chychrun on the right. You figure something out. It can't hurt to add an elite D-man to your team. And I think Jacob Chychrun, if he plays on the Leafs, he's probably getting that Team Canada consideration. He's in that category of guy where he's an elite D.
He's like Riley, right? Whereas he's slightly underrated for some reason because the defensemen ahead of them are just so good to a certain degree. People forget about how good Morgan Riley is. In my personal opinion, I love Morgan Riley.
That's actually a great segue, because I wanted to get into my stars of the game tonight, and he has to be up there. I mean, I will give you first crack, but just so you know, if you don't pick Morgan Riley, I'm stealing.
Well, it's got to be Jack. Has to be Jack Campbell. He's had a great night. It has to be Matthews, 20 seconds of the game. I mean, he won the game. And I think Morgan Riley as well. Those are my three stars.
That is a very good three stars. I will just pick the one star out of those three. I got to give it to Jack then, because Jack was just, you said it, 45 out of 46 saves. I mean, just to see him get on the right track is so relieving. Also, speaking of Matthews, it was really, I guess it wasn't that scary when he banged his head off the post, because you didn't think it was like concussion worthy, but you're just scared for the guy because you like him. Like running into the top of a post at full speed with your mouth, that's got to hurt.
I think I've done it, and playing broomball in high school. Do you ever play broomball?
Terrible. I never sport. Played. It was a little before Terrible my sport. Time. It used to be like a big weekend. They'd have a broomball tournament for high schools, but they cut it off like 2 years before I got to high school.
It's the worst. And I think I did that right into the net. But yeah, I think I was concerned that he had a broken jaw, I think. But then he came back, lost a tooth, big deal. And I tweeted to Doug Gilmore, got any dental advice for Matthews? Because of course,
Gilmore, Mitch Marner.
Both of them, yeah. It's a great one.
He'll probably have to get Mitch's dentist, because he fixed him up within a day or two, and he was looking good. That picture of Matthews, it reminded you of Marner too, with the way he had that like corner of his tooth chipped. I would have probably just dropped to the ice and started crying. Like to actually think about hitting a cold piece of steel with your teeth at that 30 speed,
kilometers like, an hour. Yeah, that's like, crazy.
That's brutal. But you said it. He a goal and an assist for him tonight. He just the line didn't have the dominant possession numbers, but they just have those shifts where it just looks like Harlem Globetrotters, where they're just cycling in the zone. Mitch Marner is just finding guys that you can't even see are open from the TV angle. You got Michael Bunting going into all the dirty areas. It's just that line is poetry in motion. And if we can find one of those guys like you were talking about to supplement the second line, like our top six will be unmatched.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why Boston, I mean, I'm by no means no fan of Boston, but I do envy their top six when they were consistently going deep into the playoffs. I think that era might be over, although I wouldn't count them out ever. I actually thought Pittsburgh was going to be a harder contest tonight, but yeah, having a top six where no team can match up, not the Lightning, not the Panthers. That would be what I want for the Leafs this year. Because I mean, to be first in the power play, top five PK, top five goals against, top two in at the dot. We have the top goal scorer. I mean, this, it feels like it's the right time to go all in. Last year, I don't know if it really did in my heart of hearts, but I think this year is a different team. And a lot of people are kind of whispering the same thing, even people who are detractors. So, you know, upgrade the left wing, get a defenseman who can fill in if there's an injury and take it from there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. By the end of February, you and I will both know what this team is, I think.
End of February? You mean end of May?
Well, we play 10 games in the next 6 days.
Oh, so yeah, that's fair.
That's a lot of games. Yeah, and we have big opponents in the next, I believe, by the end of February. Don't quote me, but I think we play Florida and Tampa and Carolina, I think.
I think Florida's in March. I think that was a big fluff about that. But yeah, we got some games against Tampa coming up. That'll be must watch TV. When do we play Tampa? Let's see. This is great podcast material. We don't play Tampa for quite some time either, actually. We play Florida in March. We don't play Tampa again until April 4th. So yeah, it's...
I was looking at March. We have Carolina coming up in March. We don't have a lot of competition this in the next few games. We do. I mean, St. Louis, you can't forget about them. They're pretty good, although they've kind of had it up and down here.
Minnesota will be a tough contest. Washington will be, but it's honestly, I kind of want some of these fluffball games because of the way the Atlantic Division's looking right now. I think we're 4 points behind Florida with a game in hand, so shooting for that first spot. Tampa again, 3 points ahead of us, so it'll be interesting down the line. Now, before we go, do you have any final thoughts?
You should check out my song "Rattle the Glass." It was on 32 Thoughts this week. And last season, it was on Hockey Night in Canada a couple times.
There we go. Rattle the Glass. Go check it out. Is it on Spotify, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere. All Rattle digital the glass. Service providers.
And where can everybody find you on Twitter?
My hockey handle is TMLFanInVan. So you'll find me there. But my music handle and my public persona is Marty Zylstra. Marty, like McFly. And Zylstra, Zylstra. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
Marty Zylstra music fans. Give him a follow. Check him out on Spotify. Do all of that good stuff. Well, Marty, thank you so much for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome.
No problem. We'll have to have you back again.
Cool.
All right.
Can't wait.
And that just about does it. And as for us, follow us at Buds All Day Podcast or at Buds All Day Cast on Twitter. And we will talk to you soon. Not gonna choke.